I'm Graham Sibley.
I'm Jan Bilton.
I'm Terry DeFellin.
And this is The Sound of Football. Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. Well, we're back to a full complement again. Jan's back. Hello, Jan.
Hello, Graham. I'm back.
Yeah, you are.
I was in the north.
Yeah, but as well. Since then, you've gone and injured yourself, haven't you?
I have. Yeah, it was because I came to the south.
Yes.
And I hurt myself.
See, you go back. You come back from like international duty, and you come back hobbling back into the studio.
Yeah, I did this in the south. You see, it's a southern air.
Oh, yeah.
It's not strong enough.
Yeah. You see, as soon as you come back down south again, you go soft again, don't you?
I do. I had to acclimatise. I should spend more time in the Midlands or something, just decompressing before I venture south.
Got a regional version of the Bend.
Yes.
Well, we had, I don't know if you heard last week, but we had Chris Knee came in and filled in quite admirably for you. And we talked about Major League Soccer.
Sorsha.
Well, it was good actually.
Done for calling it Major League Soccer and not the Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I know. I've learned my lesson.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's very definitely a thing.
Yeah. When I was editing it though, I thought, I'll just leave all those times that Terry says the MLS in there.
That's fine. Yeah, I don't mind.
we got some nice feedback off of that, which was good. Always good to have feedback. And I say this all the time, listeners, but if you do feel like giving us feedback on anything, it doesn't have to be nice stuff. You can actually tell us to do one if you really like. But yes, get in touch with us because it helps fill up the time. But this week we're not going to have any problems filling up half an hour because this week we're going to be talking about Brentford, and of course Brentford's always a subject that you know we can always talk long into the night about, isn't it, Terry?
It certainly is. Yeah, I've never quite got over the fact that we weren't able to rock up there a couple of years ago and just go to a game.
Do you know what I thought when you said to me earlier in the day we're going to talk about Brentford? I thought they need to get over this. That was years ago.
It was the look on the people's faces as they were going in. It was safe in the knowledge that they were going to see Brentford play and fail to go up.
It was that sort of mixture. It was a mixture of contempt for us for presuming that we could just simply rock up to their stadium.
Yeah.
You know, and buy a ticket and go into the stadium.
Who do you think these
hipsters think they are? Exactly. Rocking up here.
There's two idiots outside in Dortmund shirts. Massive beards, drain pipe trousers.
Oh God, yes, it's true. It's true. Oh God, it's true.
Quoting Barney Rone.
Yeah. Oh God.
So anyway, we didn't get in, and ever since, you know, it's been Brentford have been like, you know, there, you know, they drew a line that day, didn't they?
They sure did.
Yeah, sure did.
It's been hostilities ever since.
We're going to stick it to it over the next half hour as a consequence.
Well, actually, because you know, Brentford have been in the news, and you know, probably for the first time since Ron Knowles was there, actually, isn't it? They've actually been on a meteoric rise, and they're up there with the contenders for promotion this season. It's a very, very tight season this year in the Championship. If you haven't had a look at the table recently, it's certainly well worth a perusal. But it looks like they're going to become coming back up to the world. They could. They have a chance of coming up to the top flight for like the first time since, you know, well, black and white, basically.
When they played in black and white stripes.
Yeah.
Because everything was black and white.
Of course it was. It was very, very, very confusing. You know? So I think that's why they played in stripes, wasn't it, really?
Yes, I can only assume.
I can only imagine as well. But the big story, though, this week was the fact that it transpired that the manager, Mark Warburton, who brought them up last season, just last season, and is now at the helm for this promotion push, has been sacked.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Given his notice.
Been told that he can find himself a new job in the close season, doesn't he? Really, find a new job now. Start looking for one now because his services are not going to be required next season, whether or not they go up.
Yeah.
Now, Jan, what do you think of that initially? The fact that someone is what in seventh place, mm-hmm. I think at the moment.
We are seventh, yeah.
Yeah, and they're right up there with them. And just before they go and play one of the leading club, one of the teams above them at home, the manager gets effectively told you're out the door.
Yeah, and it's possibly been bubbling along for a little while because they've had two losses on the bounce as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So that may have been affecting things. I suppose if you look at it on the face of it, it looks a bit strange and possibly a bit odd, and you think, is he just another loony chairman?
Yeah.
Why would you get rid of a manager who's brought you up and looks like you could do it again?
Yeah.
You're very, very close to doing it.
Yeah,
again.
I mean, like as far as the championship is concerned, loony chairmen do seem to be like you know, they're not short of a few, are they? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a glut.
There is a little bit of a glut. I don't know if that is the collective noun for a loony chairman. But,
yeah, but it's specifically in the second tier of English football.
Yes, in the second tier of English football. Yeah,
it's called a murder in the Premier League.
Oh, right. It's called a lucre. both you've had clubs that have lost managers in recent years, but usually when you're doing very, very badly, so the manager has gone out the door because you know it's probably the best thing for the club. Can you see a reasoning beyond the things that we're going to discuss in a minute for why a club that is looking at promotion and is well on the way to it, why they would get rid of a manager?
Well, no, I can't think of any reason on the surface why you would want to get rid of a winning coach. Apart from if you felt that if that coach wasn't good enough or didn't have the ability and didn't have perhaps the experience to manage at the higher level once he'd got them promoted.
Mm.
You could perhaps, in the same way that you, when you take a team into another division, you look at your squad and go, the manager looks at the squad and says, we need better players. I suppose it's not beyond the realms of possibility that an owner might look at the coach and say, we need a better coach.
Yeah.
And so, although that is quite alien in football, you usually reward successful managers by not sacking them.
Mm.
But maybe there is some logic in saying, look, you know, you've done a great job and you're doing a great job, but if we go up, I'm going to bring somebody in with a bit more experience to do the job.
Mm.
Now, that's not what's happened here, I don't think. I don't think his leaving is conditional on them going up. I think they've had a disagreement about the way the club should be run and it's been decided that it'd be best at the end of the season that he goes, which in itself is also weird because usually if it's been decided, I mean, in any job, once you've got it in your head that you're leaving, it's difficult not to check out. Mm. And you need to be ultra professional.
Yeah.
Now, it may well be that we'll examine this in a few moments, but this is obviously a slightly different situation here at Brentford. It is odd, but I would like to think that over the next few minutes we will perhaps, or I might perhaps, argue that it's not quite as madcap as it appears.
Mm. Mm. I think, yeah, there's more to this than meets the eye.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we've alluded there is another reason behind this, and this is because the owner, one Matthew Benham, is a he's a professional gambler, isn't he?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, he is someone who has made money from the city. He owns a large betting affiliated company. I don't think it's actually a betting company itself.
But it's a betting exchange,
yes,
I believe.
Yes,
yeah.
Smart Odds, I think it is. And Terry, can you explain this?
What he's trying to do is he's looking at the statistical models that he uses in order to win money from betting,
yeah,
and then employ them in the football club. So and recruit players on the basis of that. So I guess it is. It's very difficult. You have to be careful about making comparisons to Moneyball.
Yeah.
But you're using statistical models
yeah.
in order to recruit players based upon what particular attributes you are looking for in a player at that time. So if they're good at set pieces, you sign a player who's good at set pieces that maybe not so good at much good at anything else, and you base your recruitment upon those statistical models rather than necessarily the judgment of an experienced scout or coach. And that's, as far as I know, that is what he plans to do. And he plans to bring in a sporting director who can implement that system and a coach who is used to working under those conditions, because he wants to bring in the European model of a sporting director who runs recruitment, head coach who looks after the team. Very common on the continent. Not so common over here. It does get used, but it doesn't work terribly well. And I think still our generation of managers still feel very strongly that they need to have a say in transfer policy. And this guy, Benham, is going for the car in that respect, saying, no, we're going to do this this way. And Warburton doesn't agree. And they've known each other for years.
Yeah.
They've worked together. So they have a close professional relationship. And it's been decided that this is the best way forward. That he doesn't leave immediately, that he sees out the end of the season, and then he goes in the summer. And that gives Benham enough time to organise a replacement. Seems, in a way, quite civilised.
Does seem civilised. I think that just something to add to that as well. It's, though a lot of this is to do with player recruitment, it's also to do with performance management of the players and the staff and the manager. I mean, we were talking earlier about key performance indicators, which exist in all other types of business, being applied to sport and how it happens minute by minute. And you know, this, we know from previous chats we've had, there's a lot of statistics flying around there. And I suppose that all they're doing is just taking that and applying it in the most useful way they can to try and get the best outcome from it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it strikes me as something that you know, if he has made all his money from this business model, and you know, it's something that he holds stock in and he tries to sell to other businesses, then it doesn't surprise me the fact that he's coming out and saying, well, look, I trust this system so much, I'm going to gamble all the money that I've put into Brentford on the fact that this is actually going to succeed. And I suppose really what you've got, if you're going to use a system like that, you do need everyone to be singing from the same sheet. You need everyone to be fully locked in and saying, right, okay, if this goes wrong, I know where it's going to go wrong. I know if it's the head coach's KPIs that aren't matching up with performances, then he's the one that has got to shoulder the blame. It is weird because it's alien to what most of us are used to. And yes, we know that sporting directors and head coaches are common on the continent, and they're becoming more so over here, though the implementation has been a bit all over the shop, really, to be honest. But this system whereby you're going to be buying and selling players on statistical data alone is, I think it's brave, probably in a polite term, but it's because it's so completely alien to what we normally have, as you say to it, with scouts and obviously as well with agents as well. I think that comes into play. Do you think that maybe this is a way of controlling agents' fees and the transfer market by saying, well, look, we've got all our statistical data, we think this player is worth this much and his contract is worth this much?
That's an interesting point. I mean, it's worth pointing out as well that he also owns a controlling stake in Midtjylland, in Denmark, and this model's been used there for, I think, it's a couple of years now, isn't it? And it's doing very, very well. And they have brought in players certainly a player from Arsenal, and they brought them in for not much money, and they're actually doing very, very well over there. Except it's potentially a different standard over there. So I suppose that's a really interesting point. I hadn't considered that you, instead of the agent holding all the cards, suddenly you do. But is it any different, though? I suppose I'll answer a question with a question. Is it just stripping away and making this, you know, cold black and white? This is how good this player is at this task, at this time, in this role. and applying numbers and statistics and cold hard facts to that, rather than an opinion of a scout who probably would arrive at the same conclusion, except and he's probably making all those calculations subconsciously almost, you know, except they've been expressed as, you know, hairs in the back of his neck, or I've seen this before with another player, or yes, he would do that, or maybe, you know, but it sounds the scout maybe is very, very good at what he does, but they end up with the same conclusion.
The kind of thing that comes with experience. Mm. That's why scouts are scouts, aren't they? Because they've been watching the game for so long, they know how players are going to develop, and then they know how things are going to pan out.
Yeah.
But then again, of course, with a scout, you've also got to rely on how he expresses himself and how and what his own personality is like. If he's effusive about a player. If he's effusive about any player, every player, then you know it's not going to have as much impact as someone who is suddenly saying, no, this is the best player I've ever seen in my life. So at least with this way, you've got something that no matter who's seeing or who's watching him, as long as the data is correct, which is what you've got to be reliant on. You've got to be reliant on the fact that the data is collected in the same way everywhere, which you know that's a bit of a gamble, I think, for some people, but... This is what gamblers are all about, aren't they?
Yeah, no, the data can fluctuate depending on which source it comes from.
Yeah.
That is something that is a risk. The data, I would imagine, that they're using drills down and is not usually the stuff that you would find on sites like Squawker and 442 Stats and that. It's probably considerably more in-depth than that. But there have been some issues about the way that it's measured from agency to agency, and that can be an issue. But I would probably suggest to you that over a period of time, you collect enough data on it, then it probably does even itself out over the course of a season, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that what Jan's raised there is a very good point. The impressions that a scout has are in many ways... as flaky, maybe even if not flakier, than a way of judging who is a good signing and who isn't a good signing.
Yeah.
And it's been a system that's been used for years, and some clubs do very well at it and other clubs do very badly at it.
Mm.
And I would imagine that taking a more statistical model will be exactly the same.
Yeah.
Some clubs will do it very well and other clubs will do it terribly or less well, and that's how success and failure is measured. So I don't really have a problem myself with them adopting that, because I'm sure scouts use their own criteria, and I'm sure that many times that criteria is arrived at scientifically. But I agree with you, but there isn't that uniformity that statistics have.
No.
That you can argue that takes a degree of romance out of the whole business, but that is not a reason for not doing something.
Because there are apocryphal stories, or I don't know if there might be actual stories, of clubs that have used things like Football Manager to scout players.
Yeah, I've heard. We've all heard that there are stories there.
Yeah, and this is really this is. I mean, that too has a rather extensive scouting network to actually look at these players. Given the fact that we've been collecting so much data on players for so long, with a couple of sites that you mentioned just there, and there are others as well, is it a surprise that this hasn't happened sooner?
I'm reminded of Dynamo Kiev.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, unfortunately, the name of the coach, the great coach who was there, who I believe used statistics quite heavily, perhaps in measuring the performance of his existing players, maybe not necessarily in recruiting players, but used a very scientific approach for decades. Mm. So I wonder, perhaps that's not the same thing. Perhaps listeners who have got a Ukrainian belt bent might be able to enlighten us on that, but I have a feeling that I don't think that this is the first time that this has been done. But I think that what has drawn our attention to it and drawn the media's attention to it is that it seems to sort of like fold into a nice narrative of perceived eccentric chairman doing a rather bizarre thing, like you know, giving a guy putting. I mean, who puts football managers on notice? I mean, you sack football managers, you pay them off, right? That's how it's done. That's what makes football the well-oiled, incredibly efficient industry that it is today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it should be worth pointing out this guy, Matthew Benham, he's not a recluse as such, but he's pretty camera shy.
Yeah, he's not one of these guys who just turns up, sits in the box, and expects to be looked at.
By no means. Yeah. No, he blends into the background.
And he's a supporter of Brentford as well.
And he is a supporter of the club.
Makes him a lot different to a lot of these weird, whacked out owners. And I think it easily falls into the narrative of whacked out Championship owner. Club owner, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, but were it not for the fact that his history seems to suggest otherwise, and in fact he's quite comfortable being out of the limelight. He's not a Ron Nodes type. He's not a Vincent Tan type. You know, no. He just lets the players and the manager take credit for everything. And I guess his concern, and I would imagine, although he's a supporter, he's quite keen on making some money, and he sees this as an opportunity to make money.
Yeah.
You can argue whether or not that's a good thing or not, and this is the approach that he's taken. And I think Mark Warburton is of the view that that's not the way to do it, but that it's his club and it's his money.
Yeah.
And I understand that, you know, from what I read, I mean, he's spent just south of £50 million all told since he's been involved in the club. So one could say that he's argued to make a call like that. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't work, is it? I mean, I don't think it's the kind of thing. It's not like they're building a big hotel next to the stadium, which is going to, like, you know, tank. You know, I mean, there's not in terms of decisions that you make. It's not the stupidest thing. It's not a ill-conceived or ill. You know, I mean, the worst that's going to happen is you know, they'll employ somebody who doesn't, you know, get on in the dressing room and the system doesn't work and. You know, they'll end up getting relegated and people will, you know, lose some money, but the club's not going to fall apart. It's about to move into a brand new stadium. You know, this club seems to be in a good footing. So, you know, from my point of view, I don't really see a problem with saying, as long as you know, Warburton is professional enough to be able to stay focused on the task at hand through to the end of the season, then I don't really see what the problem is. I would go further and say that, you know, if you employ a coach, say, in the Championship, and say to him, look, your job is to get us into the Premier League, but we should tell you that the likelihood is that when you do that, or if you do that, we'll replace you with another more experienced coach.
Yeah.
I think as long as everyone understands that from the outset, then you just look at it as a as you would a project management role. Yeah. You know, he said, right, your job is to get us into the Premier League. Your job isn't to keep us there.
Yeah.
Your job is to get us there, and we'll pay you a large bonus when you know, and we'll part on good terms. And I don't really see that as being a.
You can almost
a problem.
See it's almost as if that's what happened to Atkins at Southampton.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think what you said right there, but I think to be honest with you, it's sometimes unspoken. And there's a knowledge there that yes, I am going to get them there. If I do get them there, that's all well and good. But I don't expect to stay there much longer
I think there is an emotional response, though, in as there usually is in many football observers. It's the fact, well, that, you know, if this man has worked hard and he's brought them up, and then surely he deserves a crack at the whip.
It seldom works, though, does it?
Seldom
works.
It's sad. It would be good if it did.
I mean, if the guy's getting stiffed and he's being, you know, he's being made assurances and has reached an understanding and said, well, you know, they suddenly change their mind and get rid of him, then that's one thing. But if you were to say right from the outset, look, you know, this is the deal, get us into the Premier League, and then you leave, you've got three seasons to do it. What do you say?
You touched on something earlier about the fact that you know there have been players that are great. Championship players who are there to help clubs get up, but they know as soon as they get up to the Premier League, they're not going to be the first choice, or they're going to get someone else who's better in. At the end of his career, Kevin Phillips had this, didn't he?
He scored the winning goal in the playoff final to get Palace up there. Yeah. I mean, he did. They kept him on, but that was only because. You know, with the greatest respect, Palace didn't know what they were doing at the time. I think it was no one would have blamed Palace for saying, well, thanks a lot, but you go along and try and help another player, you know, get. I mean, back in the old days, this is what good pros used to do with, you know, when they were on the way down, they'd go down to the second division. Keegan, of course, at Newcastle, who was sort of like past his best, and he took them up, and that was a great moment because of the connection that he had with the club, But I mean, obviously these days they go to the MLS, but sorry, they go to MLS. But you know, even, I'm not quite sure which of those two was more insulting. But yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe one day, in another time period, Steven Gerrard would have gone and played for a second division club and tried to get them promoted. But instead, I mean, you know, he's got the ability to earn enough money, you know, with a lucrative and challenging role in LA. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, yeah, it's all about horses for courses, I guess, is what this to bring out the ultimate betting part of it. It is about horses for courses, and maybe deep down that's what this whole business is about.
I don't know about you. I mean, I'm just looking at it. I'm fascinated by it because you know, if it succeeds, it's fine. If it like crashes and burns, then it's going to make a really interesting crash to watch, isn't it?
It's worth noting as well. He's by no means a pioneer in this.
No,
that's not to say he's a crackpot or anything, because it sounds very rational. But I forget the name of the company that owns Liverpool. But they employ this. I don't think with Liverpool, I might be wrong with that, but they certainly do with their American interests. And when I was thinking about this earlier, I was minded of what had happened in other sports when they've applied cold science to it. And the one that jumped to the front of my mind was the British Cycling with Dave Brailsford. And he took apart everything, as you know, his famous phrase is, you take everything down to its component parts and improve everything by 1%, then, you know, you've got a world-beating effort there. And while this is not the same mathematics, if you like, it's the same kind of approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're just applying cold hard facts to it, and that's why I think it'll be really interesting to see what they achieve, and if they do achieve, it'll certainly turn a few things on its head.
Can we make comparisons to John Beck's Cambridge United team, who were a long ball side in extremis, and played percentages, and moved the ball directly
in a very simple way,
unconcerned with whether or not there was a player on the end of the ball, just moving it up there and then pressing the hell out of the opposition and went to get the ball back off of them, and then scoring by set piece, and they almost got promoted to the Premier League on the back of that, and they were loathed because they were very physical. Dion Dublin was your headline player of that, because obviously he went on to play for Coventry and Manchester United, and was a quality player. But I wonder whether or not that's a sort of proto version of that. I don't know.
Maybe a little bit more scientific, but yeah, you're right. It was playing the percentages. That was the term of it. The more balls you get into the danger area, the more goals you're going to get, and it worked.
I mean, that theory has been subsequently debunked, but I think it's also been subsequently rebunked.
Yeah.
So
rebunked.
Yeah, or is it undebunked?
I like rebunked.
Let's go for rebunked.
Rebunked's a good word.
And on that dictionary point, I think it's time to bring this...
Rebunked.
Time to bring this podcast to a close. You've been hearing the dulcet tones of Jan Bilton and Terry DeFallon. And if you've got to say anything on this subject, then the contact details will be in the server. From me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFallon, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
You join us again for another thrilling instalment of Sound of Football's Top Trumps. If you're listening last time, listeners, you will know that Terry He's still winning and he still holds control of the deck. His huge, huge, huge deck. And you, the listeners, you are the last man standing to oppose him. And Jan is holding your deck now, and it's looking like quite svelte six cards now, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And, how are you feeling? Can you instill some?
I'm confident I can keep my losing streak on track.
Okay, great. Okay. Well, Terry, let's not beat around the bush, and let's see who you've got and what you're going for.
So I've got David Villa.
Oh, David Villa. Mm. Yes.
So you can probably not blame me for going for career goals.
Really? Career goals?
Career goals.
Yeah? You sure?
Yes. Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
Has he scored a few then?
He scored, up to the 31st of March 2012.
Yes.
He has scored 252 goals.
I'm sure he's scored a few more since then as well.
I reckon he may have scored a few more
since then. How about you, Jan? Who's the listener got to try and get... Because there are some good players in this deck, haven't there?
They're in this deck, yes. Collectively.
And Scott Parker.
And Scott Parker. Yes. Not on my part of the deck.
Oh, dear, right. Who have we got then?
Well, career goals for Joe Hart.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Are zero.
Oh, dear.
A goalkeeper scored from open play in the Bundesliga.
I heard this.
Marvin Hitz. Yeah. Been injured since
Marvin
November.
Marvin Hitz. Nice.
That was crazy. And he scored from open play as well. Yes. In the last minute. From open play. And to make it 2-2. Yeah.
Do you think his wife is called Mrs. Hitz? Oh, come on, please. Oh, well, fine, suit yourself. Join us again next time for some more Sound of Football Top Trumps.
I think it would be foul hits, but I guess that's not as funny, is it?
It's not a funny language.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't lend itself.
German is not a funny language.
It doesn't lend itself.
There is nothing funny about the language of German. I do not know why you laugh. It is not funny.
So I've got some science of my own to share.
Oh, yeah.
Based on my own injury that I'd done yesterday.
Yeah.
Is don't spend probably 2 days of the previous week in a car, and don't spend the intervening time eating pies and drinking beer.
Okay.
Yeah. That is a not good preparation for a marathon. There's some stats for you right there.
Yeah. You see, in football, you'd be turfed out as a crackpot. Old crazy Jan Dilton. Let's have a pie and go and play some football.
What's wrong with pies before a game?
No pies before football!
He'll be taking you out of cigarettes next. Woodbine?
Spring Woodbine?